The last part of our session is a special event. Today is the ordination. We're going to publicly observe the ordination of Jiayu Chang as a priest in our order of Rinzai priests. I should say something about this. This is my first ordination, so I haven't done this before. But it's a very important occasion for Jiayu and for all of us, I think. This is the first person from our community to take this very important step in life. And I'm quite thrilled that she's decided to do this. Let me just mention something about our lineage as a way of starting. You know, our lineage belongs to the Rinzai school of Zen, but it's a rather special Japanese Rinzai school because it begins in the Ming Dynasty when a group of monks from China came to Japan and founded what is known as the Obaku Zen. Obaku is actually the third Zen tradition in Japan. There's the Rinzai, Soto, and Obaku. And Obaku was a latecomer. In the 17th century, basically, you have monks from China bringing the latest form of Chan. And this became known in Japan as Obaku Zen. And with the Obaku delegation to Japan, there was one lone monk from one lone Rinzai monk from the Hanshan Temple in Suzhou on the mainland in China. And he started a temple, Rinzai Temple, in what is now Kameoka in Japan. And since that time there has been an unbroken lineage of priests in this tradition. This is called the Cold Mountain School of Rinzai Zen. And it begins in the Cold Mountain Temple, Hanshansi, in Suzhou, and it continued through this Japanese lineage until the World War II period, when the lineage holder was a man named Miyauchi Kenko, and he had one Dharma heir, and that was my teacher, Kangan Webb, an American, who studied with Miyauchi Kenko Roshi, and also studied at Nyoshinji Temple. All the priests who trained at the Hanshan Temple in Kameoka trained also in Nyoshinji, which is a major Rinzai temple in that area. So our lineage is rather unusual. Most people don't know about it, and it's nothing special. It's just one of many Zen lineages in the world. The temple in Kameoka is sort of went down the tubes, I'm afraid. And I won't lie about it, you know. You know, after World War II, there was a political reform, and in Japan, as in China, monks were not always widely supported, believe it or not, by the population. And temple establishments tended to survive by rental properties, rental income from their properties. When people were old, they would will their properties to the local temple out of devotion to the temple, and those became a source of rental income to sustain the temple. And also, it was often a better deal for people to give their land to the temple than it was to pay taxes on their property. So people often donated their land to the temple and continued to live and farm on temple property. This was widespread in parts of Asia. After World War II, however, those properties were taken away from the temples, and many of them, many middle and small-sized temples, really faced financial ruin. And one of them was our home temple in Japan. So that's the way it goes. There's one surviving person, I'm sorry to say, who represents this lineage today, and that's me. But I'm doing my best, and you have certainly done your best at this. So today I'm welcoming Jaru into our tradition, our cold mountain tradition, and we're going to ordain. Jaru is going to be ordained in view of all of you here. And, now let me just say something, since I've demystified our lineage for you. Let me say something about what it means to be ordained. In Buddhist tradition, monk or nun could become, a person could become a monk or a nun. This was what it meant to be ordained. And if you were a monk or a nun, you basically left your family, you gave up your name, your personal name, you took a new name, and you pledged yourself to a life of poverty and celibacy as a member of the Sangha. This is the ancient practice in Buddhism. And so for literally thousands of years, men and women have given up everything they have. This is called leaving the world. They've renounced worldly life, and they've gone to become bhikkhus or bhikshuni in the classical Indian tradition. Now, this tradition has evolved over time, and it's changed. So, for example, when Buddhism went to China, it took on a new form. In India, in traditional Indian Buddhism, monks and nuns were prohibited to do any kind of work whatsoever. That really wasn't something they were allowed to do. And if you go to Thailand today, you may see some monks working, but this is a real departure from the ancient tradition of India. So the idea was that a monk or nun is entirely dependent on the labor of the community, on the support of the community. But when Buddhism went to China, it didn't really have the support of the community. And if people had depended on the income from begging, they would have starved to death. So in China, there was an innovation, which was the working monk or nun. So the idea that a monk or nun should work was a breaking with tradition, the departure from tradition. And it was instituted by a man named Bai Jian, a great Zen master named Bai Jian. And Bai Jian realized that if monks and nuns didn't support themselves by growing their own food, they'd starve to death. And he's famous for the saying, if you don't work, you don't eat. And so that was Bai Jian's innovation. Now, when Zen went to Japan, basically, it went through another major transformation, which was the introduction of, innovation of married priests. Around the 7th century, a renegade monk named Shinran got married, and he shocked everybody by doing it, and he didn't get struck by lightning or anything. He didn't turn into a monster, and people decided that it might be okay for people to get married, even if they were monks. And so in Japan, you have many monks in the Zen, even though Shinran was a Pure Land priest, you have many monks and nuns, many monks rather, who are married in various Tendai, Shin, and Zen traditions. Now, in the United States, Buddhism is undergoing yet another transformation. You have the emergence of women who are leaders in the Buddhist community. And this has happened all over the United States. So, for example, the head of probably one of the biggest Zen temples in the United States, the Los Angeles Zen Center, is a woman. And I believe at the present time, the head of the San Francisco Zen Center, probably the oldest Zen Center in the United States, is a woman. And if you go a little farther north, the leader of the Oregon Zen community, the major Buddhist community in Oregon, is a woman and a pediatrician in Chosun Bais. So what you have emerging is what I would say is another turning of the wheel, which is the rising of women who are playing a key role in Zen practice and Buddhist practice. And this has not been the case historically in Asia. So my feeling is that people, the Jaru, and people of her generation represent a very important new development in Zen practice. And that this is an innovation that is important to Zen's future as Bai Jian's innovation many centuries ago. This is absolutely essential change if Buddhism and Zen practice are to grow and prosper, in my opinion. So finally, let me just say something about Jaru. Most of you, I guess all of you know her well, so there's not any particular need for me to sing her praises. But I have been practicing with Jaru for 12 years. Isn't that right? Okay. It's been my great pleasure to sit next to her for sesshin after sesshin after sesshin. And I have always been deeply moved by her dedication and her commitment and her good humor. I have to tell you that in the 12 years that I've been doing this, I've made a fair number of mistakes and blunders. And I have sometimes regretted the way I've approached teaching Zen. Believe it or not, I haven't always been successful at it. And I have always valued very highly Jaru's friendship and her unfailing good humor, no matter what happened to go on in our community. So I think that Jaru is somebody who has demonstrated the kind of commitment to Zen practice that I was talking about today. To take vows in our lineage as a priest is basically to say that Zen is the center of my life, that my facing Mu Xun is the most important thing in my life. And that I have other things that I value that are important to me, but this is number one. Now, it's not necessary to leave the world. You can't come and live at our monastery. The one thing, we don't have a monastery. But it's not necessary to shave your head. As you notice, I don't shave my head. Those things are not terribly important in my opinion. The most important thing is that people face Mu Xun day in and day out, session after session, with the utmost devotion. And my feeling is that Jaru Chan has done that year after year for the 12 years that I've known her. So I personally believe that this is someone who is highly worthy of this, and this is a wonderful day for me. Now I have to ask Jaru to make some promises, if that's all right. Okay. First of all, are you comfortable with the promise that you won't kill anything anymore?
Yes.
Okay. I forgot question number one. Said it was your first one. Question number one, are you a human being?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. you can't be a god or a naga or other creature and be a member of the Sangha. Now, you might not know that. You have to be human. Okay. Very important. So, okay. Yes, you are a human being. You are comfortable not with the promise not to kill anything.
Yes.
Not only one, including me. Are you comfortable with the promise not to steal?
Yes.
Are you comfortable with the promise not to lie or slander?
Yes.
Are you comfortable with the promise that you will keep your marriage vows?
Yes.
And are you, this is the hardest one, yes, for some people, not for me. Are you comfortable with the promise that you will refrain from excessive use of alcohol and from all mind-altering drugs?
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Could you come forward, please? Today you have become the latest member of our Cold Mountain family. Priest Guan
Shure.
Is that close?
Mm-hmm.
Did that, what did I say? Did I even get close? Guan Shure. Guan Shure. Guanxue, my sister. My sister. This is like a karmically very important event, yeah? So I know you will honor those robes all your life. I have seen you honor this practice for these 12 years. I have the highest confidence in you, and I love you, I am your brother, and I will do everything in this life to help you. So thank you very much. You've had a long life. Monk Guan, Priest Guan Shu.